Reynolds Education Association, SEIU Local 503, Teamsters Locals 162 and 206, and Washington Education Association, Riverside.
Well, any final words for us?
I just wanted to let everybody know this, we're all busy. Everybody, you know, I certainly have had those moments where coming to another thing and another event on a Saturday, especially, can feel like, oh boy, I just needed a minute to catch a break. But you will leave this event more energized, more excited, and more capable of organizing with your coworkers than you came in. It's just a shot in the arm that all of us need, which is part of a big part of why we do it. So definitely don't sleep on that.
Yeah, I would just underline what Mark was saying. It's just like you will be, you'll take energy out with you, and it will feel better going to work the next day. After, you know what we say, some of the best organizing happens during social time. So there you go.
Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Mark Brenner and Lorene Shear about Portland's upcoming Troublemaker School. Thanks to my co-host, Laura Wadlin. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio. This Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipe.
Host of Democracy Now!, you're listening to KABU 90.7 FM.
Can't get good reception of KABU on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and today we also have all of our Prison Pipeline collective members here for a special show. How about that? Hey, folks, you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi, my name is Emma Lugo, and I've been producing with Prison Pipeline for about 8 years.
Hi, I'm Karen James. I've been here with Prison Pipeline since 2011.
Hi, I'm Doug McVeigh. I've been with Prison Pipeline since about 2015.
And I really appreciate having the opportunity to work with y'all over all these years. And one thing that's always very educational, informative, useful for me is that the three of y'all specifically are some of my go-to people when talking about the Oregon legislation. There's a lot going on. There's always a lot going on anyways. And there's been a lot of interesting things that are brewing and things that also didn't make it. But we're going to start talking about some of the things that did and how important it is for people to learn about those and to activate themselves as well and get energized and really start keep their eyes on the prize so that some of these things can go through. Doug, we're going to start with you today. And basically, Oregon voters passed by referendum in November 2020 this Measure 110 Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. It was, and it passed overwhelmingly too, had two major components. One was that it decriminalized small amounts of several different illegal substances. personal use amount, so that the idea would be the police would spend less time wasting time on people who had small amounts and would maybe do their jobs. The other part of it was that it put many millions of dollars into programs providing the kind of services that people need. Well, people who use drugs, you get treatment, sure, and you know, 5 days you get a detox, and then 30 days away and everything's great. Somebody's been paid to go through the 12-step program that, well, actually, those are supposed to be free, but you know, whatever. And then they come out and they go back to the same place and they're still unhoused and they still have the medical problems that they had and they still aren't getting treatment for some of the difficulties that they've gotten and there's no counseling available. And so, funny enough, a lot of times people just go back to using substances. So in this case, instead of forcing people into that ridiculous and costly sort of revolving door, they're actually working on providing services like housing assistance and counseling and peer mentoring and the other things that Medicaid does not pay for. Anyway, Measure 110, brilliant measure, passed. The same people who opposed Measure 110 are still opposed to the thing. And so we had a few different bills. The one, however, that came through is House Bill 2513, the A engrossed version. That one has already passed the House and is over on the Senate side. It was referred to Senate Healthcare. We don't have a hearing set for it yet. So we'll see how things go. But what it would do is it establishes a policy of state to encourage treatment and recovery for people struggling with substance use. It gives some money to the Oregon Health Authority, or rather it lets them spend more on administration, so they'll be happy. 2513A, again, has not yet been scheduled for a hearing in the Senate Committee on Health. Healthcare committees are real busy this year because they're also working on things like the implementation of the Right to Healthcare constitutional amendment that we just passed, but hopefully they'll be scheduled soon. We'll have more. There's another bill in the Senate Health Committee that we're looking at, and that's House Bill 2395A, essentially the naloxone bill. It does a lot more than that. There's a couple of things in particular. The exempting certain items from drug paraphernalia prohibitions so that fentanyl test strips can be made available. As it is, fentanyl test strips are illegal in this state unless you're some kind of health provider. Full disclosure, I'm a supporter and donor to a project called FentCheck, which operates out of the Bay Area. And they provide fentanyl test strips to nightclubs and bars and venues, places around in the Bay Area and several other cities around the U.S. It'd be great to have them here in Portland because, I mean, if you're a person who uses drugs, you have a regular provider, a regular someone who works in the drug industry that you purchase from. They might be testing the substance themselves, so you know what you're getting. But if you're out there in a nightclub and it's just one of those random things, maybe you're visiting the big city for the first time as a college graduate and you come up here and you go to a club and you run across somebody who's selling a little something something, it would be good to know that little something something is what it's supposed to be, or that at least using it won't leave you dying of an overdose. I know it's a little bit off to topic, but people who use drugs are frequently targeted by law enforcement because we're talking about drugs that are illegal. So it kind of works. There are some other things too, which is interesting. One is that would allow a minor to obtain diagnosis or treatment of substance use disorder, not methadone or substitution treatment, but the kind of detox and then talk therapy by a mental health care provider without having to get parental consent. Very important, because the stigma of having to say, I am a drug addict, that's really hard. I have a substance use disorder. That's really hard to do. And if you are 16-year-old and you're afraid of your parents, well, you know, I mean, anyway, 2395A, it's in the Senate Committee on Healthcare. And that too, we're hoping it passes as is. These are important measures.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Emma, the Oregon Justice Resource Center introduced SB 579 to give the right of people to vote while incarcerated. What's up with that?
Yes, the Oregon Bill 579, which allows people convicted of a felony to register to vote, update their voter registration, and vote in elections while incarcerated, is currently in the Ways and Means Committee. This is an important bill that really needs to be brought to the attention of the general public. There are approximately 12,000 people in Oregon who are currently denied their right to vote. And this is particularly represented by the Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and people of color community. The right to vote is a fundamental right. It's enshrined in our Constitution. More than 95% of people who are incarcerated will eventually reenter society after completing their sentence. They'll be working jobs, raising families, and paying their taxes. Making sure that they can vote while they're incarcerated allows them to feel involved in their community, and it also increases the chances of success when they get back. We already do allow some people who are incarcerated to vote. People who are in jail but who have not been convicted of a felony or are awaiting trial are permitted the right to vote, although it's difficult sometimes getting them ballots. And people who have been previously incarcerated can also be re-enfranchised and restore their right to vote. This is simply extending the voting franchise to adults in custody. Adults in custody are future citizens of this country. They're previous citizens. While they're incarcerated, their rights of citizenship should not be denied, especially their right to vote. So this is a really important legislative. It's a very important a restorative justice bill, I think. And, anyway, so that's where it's at right now. It's had a lot of support, widespread public testimony in favor of this bill. And I would just encourage people to call their legislators and say, Senate Bill 579, we want you to move that forward. We support the right of felons to both register to vote, to update their voter registration, and to vote in elections while they're incarcerated.
That is a very important bill. Thanks a lot for sharing about that. Karen, Oregon legislature passed a bill in 2013 on justice reinvestment. 10 years later, there's a bill before legislature again. So what's going on with this bill now? And what's the number for it?
The Transforming Justice Coalition has a few bills down in the legislature right now. And Transforming Justice Coalition is led by Partnership for Safety and Justice. And all the bills have had hearings and work sessions, and most of them are now in Ways and Means. But the one bill, Senate Bill 344, is on justice reinvestment. And many of you may remember in 2013, Oregon was destined to build another prison. Incarceration rates were increasing. And along came House Bill 3194 in 2013 that flatlined prison growth. And what happened with that bill, and it was a major piece of legislation that passed the Oregon legislature that year. Over the years, they did not build a second women's prison. They did not build another prison that was destined to be built in Junction City. And instead, they did flatline prison growth, and we ended up closing two prisons. So we now have 12 prisons instead of 14 in the state of Oregon. So what they did with the savings of those dollars, 2013, is they distributed those funds among all the counties in Oregon. And that was supposed to use those funds to come up with less costly forms of accountability for people who commit crimes and for crime prevention. And this year, with Senate Bill 344, it is now, justice reinvestment is sunsetting. So it's now time to renew that bill. So that's what Senate Bill 344 would do. It would renew justice reinvestment for another 10 years so the counties can continue to get these funds. Another bill that was brought forth by Transforming Justice Coalition is Senate Bill 581, and that is earned discharge. Now, we have earned discharge on the books right now in Oregon for people coming out of the state prison, but it is very complicated. The supervision officers have to figure out when a person was convicted and figure out their time. And so this bill, Senate Bill 581, would expand earned discharge eligibility requirements consistent for people on post-prison supervision, probation, and parole. And it rewards people who are successfully meeting their supervision goals to earn up to 50% reduction off their supervision time. So the last bill, the bill that is on the books now, was not retroactive. So this would make retroactive and across the board for everyone. When people come out of prison, you know, they've done their time. They spent their time in prison, they've done their time, and yet they have to continue their parole or probation for 3, 5, 10, you know, long periods of time. And these are excessive continuing sentencing. And as the ACLU pointed out, that nationwide reports reveal that most people incarcerated while on post-prison supervision, when they land back in jail, they're not for a conviction of new offenses. Rather, they were incarcerated for just breaking minor rules of supervision. They were caught drinking or using drugs. Sometimes they moved and did not alert their parole officer of their new address. So that's a technical parole violation, and they're thrown back in jail and prison because of that. So this is disrupting people's lives. The parole officers show up at their places of employment, and people just cannot get on with their lives, especially when they are, you know, doing everything corrections is asking of them to do. So we want to give them 50% off their supervision time if they are following all the rules. So that's what Senate Bill 581 does. So yes, please contact your legislators and let them know that this is a very important bill. Another bill that Partnership for Safety and Justice and the Transforming Justice Coalition is advocating for is House Bill 2650. Now, traditionally, people with lived experience are not at the table making policies that affect them personally. So this bill would require that 50% of the people sitting at the table are directly impacted by the policies that they are discussing. The bill also allows for compensation of those eligible members who are serving on these work groups and task forces. This is a very important piece of legislation also that is in Ways and Means right now, and this ensures equitable outcomes. You know, most people traditionally, as I said, the people sitting at the table don't have a clue what they are discussing. They don't have lived experience. They're not people of color. They don't represent a wide constituency. And this bill would change that and make it more equitable. And we would have more equitable outcomes. And these policies would actually do something to help people that are affected. So that's House Bill 2650. Transforming Justice Coalition has a few other bills, restorative justice and other legislation. Yeah, I want to throw out this website right now where you can look up all these bills. It's www.oregonlegislature.gov, G-O-V. You can go to that website and look up all these bills. You can track the bills, and you can submit testimony through that website. You know, these bills, they're very difficult. Like Emma just spoke about Senate Bill 579. This is the third legislative session that Oregon Justice Resource Center has introduced that bill to allow people to vote while incarcerated. These bills aren't passed easily. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of voices. So we need people to contact your legislators, your state legislators, and let them know how you feel about this very important legislation for criminal legal reform.
All right. Well, there's a lot on the table there for our listeners and for the community. Just get involved and be looking at all these important bills. And yeah, they affect everything from voting, from people's participation in the so-called democratic system here in the U.S. and things that affect people who were in recovering or still using. And so, and there's a lot of things that also didn't make it. So we're going to talk about some of the stuff that didn't make it. Doug, we're going to start back off with you. And I think you had some things to say about SB 1070 or whatnot.
Yes, there is a bill that I just learned is not going to be moving forward. A couple of days ago, got an email from Oregon Justice Resource Center. Those folks do really wonderful work. SB 1070 will not move forward this session relating to domestic abuse survivor defendants. It's in essence, and I did a show about this not long ago, actually. Victims' rights is a really sacred thing. And, you know, people who've the thing is, we don't really take care of people. We use them for political props. We use them to try and move forward some really heinous, heinous laws and criminal penalties. But when it comes down to actually helping, you know, and that's the problem. That's the real problem because, you know, hurt people will hurt people is the saying, right? And understanding that is really key to moving forward. And unfortunately, in this case, SB 1070 will not be moving forward this session. Just to read it, SB 1070 would have allowed for more just sentencing for survivors of domestic violence who become criminal defendants by virtue of the abuse they suffered and take a significant step toward much needed care and support for incarcerated survivors. That's a quote from the email from OJRC. It's the kind of way that people end up being used as pawns politically to advance a right-wing agenda. We've seen it so many times with so many issues. And in this case, it's trying to say, hey, you know, let's talk about doing something for people who have been victims of crime. And there's just no time for something like that. Really, it calls into question a lot of that political manipulation of public sympathy to get harsher penalties and tougher penalties for people based on this, you know, having sympathy for the crime victim. Let's actually have some real sympathy for crime victims by providing them the services that they need and the kind of care and understanding and compassion that they actually deserve. Maybe we could start there instead. It's really quite frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, these are all things that we're all passionate about. And Mo, I know you're also passionate about following up about SB 320, right? And how, you know, that's something that's important that it needs to get addressed. It didn't make the mark, but I'm sure we'll see it again, right?
Yeah, Senate Bill 320 was introduced in the 2023 regular session. It would have provided that people sentenced to mandatory minimums under ballot measure 11 for a crime other than murder, and they've not been previously sentenced under measure 11, is eligible for a reduction in sentence for appropriate institutional behavior and participation in certain programming. I go into Coffee Creek almost every 2 weeks, and I hear from many of the adults in custody, both on the medium side and the minimum side. And the reason I'm talking about this bill is because they specifically asked me to talk about this bill. I talk to these women who they go to chapel, they participate in frontline firefighters, they do the programs for alcohol and drug treatment, they get counseling, they have, you know, really good behavior. They've been doing everything that they need to do to become a productive citizen. And some of them are just basically being warehoused in prison for like 20 years. And it's because of Measure 11. This bill would have provided some relief for those people. And they just asked me, you know, to tell people about this bill. It's currently in the Judiciary Committee, and it's probably not going to move forward this year, but it's a really important bill. And it's not really dead, because once it goes to Judiciary, it just kind of stays there. So I prefer to think of it as resting. I mean, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 or 4 years of reintroducing some legislation for it to begin to make steam. But these people, you know, they're model citizens. They're going to come out and become really productive members of our society. And we also don't think about the impact that incarcerating someone has on their loved ones. For instance, someone gave testimony at the public hearing on this bill, and she talked about what a really good inmate her son has been and how he's in his 8th year. And she had to go through all of her cancer treatments without his support. He's been a model citizen while he's been incarcerated, and he could have come out and been of aid and comfort to his mother while she was going through chemotherapy. You know, most people learn their lessons pretty quickly once they get inside. And once they've learned their lesson, it's time to give them another chance. And that's part of what Senate Bill 320 was hoping to address. So let's hope that our state legislators bring it back again next year. And in the meantime, we're going to keep talking about these issues affecting adults in custody here on Prison Pipeline.
Well, yeah, we can hope these things continue to incubate. Karen, I know you probably have some anecdote as well on that in the last few minutes before we close up too.
Well, I just want to give a shout out to some real heroes down in the Oregon legislature. We have some fabulous legislators who are working really hard to get some of these bills passed. And there's so many, I'm not going to name them all because I'll forget some of them, but we have to give a shout out to our hero legislators who understand the importance and the ridiculous laws around our criminal legal system, our mandatory minimum sentencing laws, victims' rights, and everything else. So shout out to our legislators. And please go to www.oregonlegislature.gov and check out these bills. Contact the organizations that are behind these bills. The Transforming Justice Coalition is a coalition of groups of people with lived experience, people of color from around the state, and working so hard on behalf of adults and youth in custody.
There is one thing I would add. A lot of bills that are going to make it anywhere are already basically in the second house. It's possible that things, as they seem right now, are what they're going to look like if and when they are passed. But there is this maneuver that can go on in the legislature. It's called the gutton stuff. And what happens is an amendment is put forward that deletes everything from the start to the end, and then replaces it with something possibly completely different from what the authors intended. It all depends on the title. It has to be germane to the title in order to be appropriate, but it can be a complete reversal. So in the case of something like, for instance, HB 2513, the bill title is Relating to Drugs. It's really important that people are paying attention and watching this as we go through, because anything can actually happen, including a gut and stuff maneuver where literally everything gets taken out. And one of the really awful bills, just because they got beaten overwhelmingly in the election, doesn't mean that they've given up. There are a handful of testimony against 2513, basically boiled down to drugs should be illegal. And that's about where it gets to. Republican activists are not changing their stripes. The people who supported drug war 30 and 40 years ago still support drug war now. And they have some slightly younger folks, not really that younger, people my age, I guess. You got to watch these things through to the end because, you know, political horse trading happens. Deals get cut, may not have anything to do with policy, might have to do with a favor or a promise of a favor down the line. Who can say? But none of these things are etched in stone until they've actually been passed by both houses. You really have to keep your eye out till the bitter end.
You know, what Doug was mentioning is very true. I mean, a bill is never truly dead. There's always a chance up until they hit the final gavel that something can come through. And that's why there's always hope for really good bills. Unfortunately, that also means we have to be vigilant and watch out for really bad bills that, you know, they can try to sneak in there. And that's why it's important for us all to pay attention to what our state legislators are doing and to let them know about the things that we support.
And you heard it here on Prison Pipeline on KBOO. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. And special thanks to all of our amazing hosts from the Prison Pipeline Collective. Thanks so much, Emma, Doug, Karen. I appreciate you all.
A big kudos to Karen, Adam, who put this show together and really, you know, holds this collective together so well. Thank you, Karen.
I'll second all that.
Love you all.
Thanks for listening. Free them all.
They won't build no schools anymore. Oh, they build where the prison. Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contributions for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and/or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer matching.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. My next guest has shared the stage with household names like Trevor Noah, Roy Wood Jr., and Gina Yashere. Her latest project is the debut comedy album, Black and Blue. I'm talking about the one and only, the very